Welcome to Discover Lafayette. I'm Jan Swift. I'd like to thank you for joining us for this inaugural television broadcast of Discover Lafayette, which partners with our audio podcast of the same name. On Discover Lafayette, we focus on the people and culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana in the region we call Acadiana. There are many reasons to call Lafayette home. Lafayette enjoys a certain wildcatter mentality, which makes it an inviting place for entrepreneurs. Our guest today is Tom Cox, whose own entrepreneurial days started back in 1995. As founder and CEO of GolfBalls.com, Tom launched the first online retail business in Louisiana. From the first year's sales of $17,000, GolfBalls.com has grown to $25 million in annual sales. Tom Cox also founded Einstein Digital Media, a web development firm that grew to be one of the largest in Louisiana prior to its sale. Tom Cox is also the volunteer president of the Opportunity Machine, a business incubator and accelerator based in Lafayette that is home to more than 30 startups in the last 5 years. Tom, you're also active in Lafayette and Acadiana, serving as vice chair of the Louisiana Immersive Technologies Enterprise, and he's a member of the Iberia Bank Lafayette Advisory Board. Tom is former chair of the Louisiana Workforce Commission and the Lafayette Economic Development Authority, and he's been an advocate for entrepreneurship throughout his term, not only as commissioner, but in your volunteer work in our community. And last but not least, Tom is married to Susan and is the proud new father of Thomas Van Cox. Tom Cox, welcome to our show, Discover
Jan,
Lafayette.
It's awesome to be here today.
Thank you. I'm so honored. As we said, this is our inaugural television episode, and I couldn't think of a better person that exemplifies what Lafayette has to offer for business people. So tell us about you and how GolfBalls.com got its start back in the middle 90s.
Yeah, so I was fresh out of UL. I was a club manager at Le Triomphe Country Club, and I had been a club manager for several years, and it was right around the time that Al Gore invented the internet. You may remember.
Yes.
So we all remember.
He did.
And so in like 94, 95, I started kind of studying and learning about the internet, and while I was in club management, I was doing a little bit of computer consulting on the side. Mm-hmm. That was always my passion. Kind of golf was my job, computers were my passion.
Right.
And so the internet came along. And then in 1995, there was this, in the same week, I was interviewing web developers to do a website for the country club. Mm-hmm. Because people would like the people that are going to spend a lot of money having a wedding, they want to see pictures, they want to send.
Right.
And that, back in those days, that's what the internet was really good at doing, was showing pictures. And that same week, we also were meeting with the guys that dive in the lakes to pull the balls out. And so I kind of had this idea to pull the two businesses together. Mm-hmm. And build a website to sell used golf balls on the internet. And that was kind of the beginning of GolfBalls.com.
Let me back up. Are there a lot of balls that go in the water? Is this a common event?
Fortunately for the old GolfBalls.com and the new GolfBalls.com, a lot of balls go in the water.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So it's a good way to recycle.
Yep.
Reuse,
yep.
Reduce, recycle golf,
yep,
balls.
And that's really how we got started. Uh-huh. The first year of business, full year of business, was 1996, and we did a whopping 17,000 in sales.
I bet you were excited, though.
It was proof of concept, mm-hmm. and this was, you know, I had another job and I was doing,
sure,
other things, and it was a hobby.
Right.
And then year two, we did about 70,000 in sales. So then, it's a little bit more than, mm-hmm, more than just a hobby. It's growing pretty good growth rate.
Still selling the recycled golf balls.
It was at that point in time in '97. It was strictly used golf balls.
Uh-huh.
And then in '98, we started touching on some new balls. And in '98, we did about 200,000 in sales.
Oh my gosh!
And at that point, it became a hobby gone awry. And so that's when your all of your free time kind of gets mm-hmm, focused on this side gig,
right,
that's become an interesting business, a really neat business.
So I'm thinking about this. So you graduated from, I know, Acadiana High,
yep,
and then USL at the time,
yeah.
UL Lafayette now, and you were in management, or you didn't study computers,
No, I graduated in political science,
okay,
with a business minor. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, you know, like you.
Yeah, well,
and
it's a good thing you didn't.
And it wasn't in the cards. I was inspired when I was at Le Triomphe. I got to interact with a lot of fantastic entrepreneurs,
right?
Because the guys that are there, they're members of the clubs that I'm interacting with. Mm-hmm. They would start their own business, and we would talk about it, and it was just very interesting to me. I don't know that there's anybody in my family history that's been an entrepreneur. My dad was a government employee. Mm-hmm. His dad was a government employee. My mother's dad was they have all that in their history. And so,
right.
So somehow I got a little taste of entrepreneurship,
sure.
And it activated the entrepreneur gene in me.
But you didn't jump in like risking everything. You were
able to grow this in a safe way. You know, that's a piece of advice that I like to give
mm-hmm.
to entrepreneurs. You can ease your way into it. You don't have to give up your day job to test the waters on something.
Mortgage your home or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Do it incrementally. Keep the risk low,
mm-hmm.
and then when you believe it's something and kind of the right things are coming together. You've got
mm-hmm.
revenues. You've got profits. At that point you can pull the trigger and go after it.
Did you learn a lot at the first 2-3 years when your sales went from 17,000 to 200? Was it a tough learning curve or? Did you take two?
Yeah, so fortunately for me, I had already been in management for a while before starting GolfBalls.com or co-founding GolfBalls.com. And it was that kind of understanding of kind of working with people and working with financials and working
mm-hmm.
with that kind of helped me scale in the early years of the business. And when it goes from 70,000 to 200,000, that's manageable. When it went from 200,000 to a million, that's when it kind of gets a little bit more difficult to manage.
Right.
And you just have to have great people that you work with. I had some really good founding partners in the business. You know, Chuck mm-hmm. Newsom. Chuck Newsom
exactly.
was involved in the business
yeah.
early on, and Rob Greer was as well. He was he left the business in '98, and Chuck left the business a few years ago. But they were all certainly critical in the early years of the business.
So when your sales really exploded, you had to make the decision, you know,
right
in
98, 99
yeah.
is when I said, okay, this is, I really need to do this. I
mm-hmm.
need to spend all of my energy, focus on this, and kind of stop doing all the other things that I'm
uh-huh.
doing. And at that point, I raised some money that kind of gave the business enough capital to help scale up a little bit more, and that was when we went from the $200,000 a year to the $1 million a year.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
And you were doing that, Tom, if I remember right, around the dot-com bubble and then the
yes,
bursting every, of the bubble.
Everything was great
yeah.
until it wasn't. When
exactly.
When the dot, you know, it was easy to raise money. It was
mm-hmm.
it was great to be an internet company, and the fundamentals of e-commerce companies, and I don't know how many are going to remember the dot-com bubble bursting.
Some of our friends will.
Yeah, right, some of our friends will. But when it happened, there were a lot of companies that should have been blown up. Right,
mm-hmm.
They weren't sound business models.
Mm-hmm.
But it was everything out. Right,
yeah.
And so if you had dot-com, and I remember a board discussion where we said maybe we need to take dot-com off the back of our name because it was bad to be a dot-com. In fact, at the time I had my license plate says dot-com, so
oh,
I
does.
Wasn't going to take dot-com
no.
off the back of the business name.
Yeah, so you made it.
So we made it through that time.
Yeah.
Then we had another bump in the 2008-2009
mm-hmm.
time frame, and that year we were flat. We weren't used to being flat. In fact, we have grown at a double-digit rate for every year since inception, with the exception of 2009, the year of the Great Reception. We were flat that year. So we kind of our normal growth rate is in the 10 to 15% range.
That's incredible over
yeah.
that period of time. So you
consistent.
Consistently
yeah.
growing. So you morphed from the used, recycled golf balls to the new products, and I know you don't just sell golf balls.
Yeah,
so we
made a decision to get out of the used ball business in 99, 2000,
mm-hmm.
2001, right in that time frame. eBay came online, and it just became really easy for the guys that were diving in the lakes to take their best products and sell them directly on eBay
mm-hmm.
to customers, and we kind of saw that coming. It was also we also found it difficult to grow relationships with our key manufacturers selling a lot of focusing on used golf balls.
Because
we're competing
yeah.
against the new product.
Right.
And so we decided what was interesting about the used ball space was that it was online. That was new to begin with, but then it was hard to find because you couldn't buy used balls everywhere. By 2000, you could find used balls everywhere. There was a lot of places you could buy it. But so we kind of pivoted the company. I hate the word, but it's kind of what we did. We pivoted and we started focusing on customized golf products. We developed our own software from the beginning. Mm-hmm. We developed our own technology infrastructure, and so that owning our own infrastructure allowed us to morph the website and the business into a business focused on customization. So if you looked at a snapshot of our company's sales this year, about 80% of what we sell is decorated or customized in some way, which you wouldn't know it. But if you walked around our facility, mm-hmm. You'd see that a good half of our staff is dedicated to printing golf balls, packing, unpacking, or embroidering hats or bags or towels or mm-hmm. processes like that. So we like mass customization. We feel like e-commerce mm-hmm. has continued as a trend, more and more selling online.
Of course, yeah.
We feel like mass customization and decoration it continues to be a growing trend. And so we kind of like those two trends. Golf is kind of flat. It's been mm-hmm. fairly flat for a little while, but those two other trends are
we'll
certainly
keep you going.
Yeah, those are growth trends.
I want to commend you on seeing the e-commerce before you opened a physical facility,
yep.
because I know most businesses have a physical site and they add e-commerce, but you did it differently. Is that correct?
That's true. We were an online business for, was it six or seven years before having about 6 or 7 years before having a store. What we learned is that having a website doesn't, at least back, you know, 15 years ago, having a website did not give you a license to get, or did not give you an opportunity to open manufacturer accounts the way we wanted to. And so having a store was a good way mm-hmm. to showcase all that we did locally, right? Mm-hmm. Because we want to have a local presence.
Right.
And also it allowed our manufacturers to have additional confidence that we weren't just an e-commerce website
mm-hmm.
or fly by night or garage band. We had a real commitment to a store.
A grunge band.
Yeah. there's a lot of garage bands out there.
Yeah.
And that we were a real business committed
uh-huh.
From their standpoint, several of them got burned during the .com crash, right? So they opened accounts for these e-commerce businesses that raised a bunch of money
mm-hmm.
and then they went out of business. And so they were even more cautious after the .com crash. So for us, it kind of helped prove out that we were here to stay.
Right. Did you know from the beginning, like once you really hit some success, Tom, did you think I'm going to stay in Lafayette? Did you consider moving? Can you talk about that, about why you're still here in Lafayette after
sure.
all this success?
I mean, Lafayette's a great place to, we all know Lafayette's a great place to raise a family.
Mm-hmm.
We all know Lafayette's a great place to start, run, and grow a business. The university, everything, you know, great workers, great employees, great partners. The university for us provides kind of a steady stream of really smart,
mm-hmm.
eager, you know, technology or business
right.
minded people. It's just a nice place. I think geographically, being located in the center of, you know, south center of America,
mm-hmm.
for us shipping time, it's like 2 days to the East Coast and 2 days to the West Coast for most ground shipments that we ship. So it's geographically it's pretty good, and we've got Big Brother Stuller in the back, you know.
Yeah.
So they've got the big airplanes at the
That's true, the FedEx facility.
So we have a little bit of leverage because of what they do, too.
I didn't think about that.
Yep.
So a lot of you bigger companies really, not that you collaborate directly, but you support each other.
I think the fact that there's such a big UPS and FedEx presence
mm-hmm.
here as a result of Stuller's success has helped us a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So your sales
Matt.
I know. Thank you, Matt Stoller. Your sales are national, international? Can you talk about that?
So maybe 10%, 7% in Louisiana, maybe a little bit less than that right now.
Mm-hmm.
95% Louisiana and U.S. and about 5% international.
Okay.
So we do a little bit in Canada, a little bit overseas,
mm-hmm.
not a whole lot of business outside of the United States right now.
Right.
It's definitely on our roadmap, but it's just not
yeah.
in the near term, not
yeah.
in the near term roadmap.
Right. Well, I know you've worked a lot as a volunteer supportive presence for other entrepreneurs, and I'm assuming that you've learned, you know, you've kind of, You could write books, I'm sure, about starting a business, growing a business.
We have groups of businesses that come through, or students that come through all the time, and I always tell them, we've made just about every mistake that can possibly be made. So let us tell you what we know. So as a result of making nearly every mistake that can be made, I feel like not just myself, but we like to, my core management team likes to work with entrepreneurs in the area. In fact, you know, we do through the Opportunity Machine right now.
Let's talk about that.
So we do some coaching. I would call it consulting, but it's not consulting. It's just, you know, we'll invite one of the an OM member to come in, and I'll have my CIO and my marketing director, or if someone else is right within the company, we'll spend an hour with them and just see if we can provide some insight that can help their business succeed.
Okay. It's amazing to me how many people I speak to, Tom, that don't know yet about what the Opportunity Machine offers and what it is. Can you give some background on that?
It is Lafayette's home for entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. It is located at the Light Center.
Yep.
About half of the first floor, maybe a little bit more than that.
Right by the Cajun Dome.
Right by the Cajun Dome in the Light Center, and it is a home for. If you have an idea and you want to turn it into a business, if you have a business and you want to accelerate your business, or if you're an existing company and you have an idea for an offshoot of what you're doing right now and you'd like to share it with other entrepreneurs or coaches or potentially investors, Opportunity Machine is a place for you to go and interact and create connections with resources that you might need.
Is there a charge for any of this?
Actually, there really isn't a charge for any
minimal,
of this.
Minimal, like membership. If you'd like a
regular co-working space, there is a small charge. If you'd like to attend a lot of the courses, there really isn't. In fact, coming up on November, I believe it's November 2nd, we have our second OM Entrepreneur Expo coming up at the Cajun Dome. So that's pretty exciting. So really, it's the programming is free. Mm-hmm. There might be courses that we charge for periodically if we have to hire somebody to come in and put it on. But for the most part, the training sessions are included.
I've taken advantage of the Opportunity Machine. I want to shout out to Zach Barker.
Zach and Destin there.
Destin Argo and Alyssa
fantastic.
Dirk that work there. When I was coming up with this concept for Discover Lafayette, they helped me, and there's been no charge. I haven't taken advantage of office space yet, but I know the charge was very minimal, and the resources offered through government funding. I mean, these are taxpayer dollars helping us. I really want to recommend that people go to this, and I didn't know that you served as a mentor. I knew you were volunteer chair, if that's correct.
I think I informally serve as a mentor. Mm-hmm. For example, Pete Prados has his accelerator group grown through, and he invited me to speak to their group a few weeks back. Well, they were introducing their businesses to me, and I was giving them business, you know, just giving them some ideas. And it just seemed to, like, a couple of them I felt like I could be fairly impactful with. Uh-huh. So I reached out to Pete and said, hey, can you connect me? I'd like to spend some additional time with a couple of these entrepreneurs.
Now,
they're free to say no, Tom, go away.
Yeah, but who's going to say no?
Well, of course.
Opportunity to learn. So.
Well, and free advice is free, right?
It's only as good as Yeah, to hear someone who's successful talk about the mistakes they made and also the good choices they made. I'm sure you share some of the good things.
Yeah.
What advice do you give young or any entrepreneurs, anybody that's trying to start a new endeavor? Do you have some wisdom that you usually share with them?
Yeah, so I'd say one is thoroughly vet your idea. Don't take an idea and run with it. Take an idea and study it and write it and rewrite it and then write it again and share it with friends. And then take their input, research it, and then just kind of continue that process for a while. Mm-hmm. Let it kind of gel, and then turn it into a business plan. And then once you have that business plan, share the business plan. Do a lot of studying and research before you pull the trigger on your business idea, because you'll be much better prepared for adversity, and everyone has adversity in business.
Exactly.
And I think the second, and the plans change, right? It's only good for one day. The moment that you know, it's a living document.
Right.
The second piece of advice I would give is make sure that you hire great people from the very beginning and spend a lot more time on it than you think you should. Hiring great people is the most important part of the entrepreneur's job, the CEO's job, or any manager's job is making sure that you have the right people on the team.
And I guess that's one of the toughest things, huh?
It's hard, and it takes a tremendous amount of time to do it, mm-hmm. and it's a commitment. I mean, mm-hmm. we have a company commitment to making sure that we bring really good people on the team.
Right.
And it's in early on, you know, my senior Tom CEO to younger Tom CEO, Tom, you should have spent more time, mm-hmm. more time, you know, bringing great people. Because as an entrepreneur, you want to do what it is you like.
Right.
If you bake, you want to bake cakes. If you're a web developer, you want to develop websites. Hiring's for other people. It's not. Hiring is for the people that want to build successful businesses.
Mm-hmm. And I know with the Opportunity Machine, Zach Barker and his team will help you with the business plan, as well Heidi Melanson, the Small Business Development Center, which are all based right in that little complex area by Lida.
In the same area.
Uh-huh.
And it's a fantastic. So it's one thing to talk about the different pieces, mm-hmm. like you've got mentoring and you've got courses, you've got boot camps, and you've got small business development, mm-hmm. with Heidi, you've got the university, but the real value is the ecosystem that's been created, you know, and kind of the peer group and other entrepreneurs that are there. And while you can have insight from Heidi and insight from Zach, and it may not be the same, right?
Which is probably good to get different perspectives.
It is certainly a different perspective, uh-huh. but then you can share that insight with other entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. in a formal or informal setting, and that's
right.
where really good ideas start to gel.
And Tom, when you started your business in 95, 96, we didn't have that entrepreneurial ecosystem. This has really been a growth over the years, right?
It is.
I know you've been a big part of that.
Overnight success stories, right? Mm-hmm. They take 20 years.
Right.
I would say there has been, but really in oil and gas.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of within certain sectors of the economy, there have been fantastic entrepreneurial ecosystems. Mm-hmm. If you step outside oil and gas, I would say there might be a couple isolated areas, but with kind of technology unrelated oil and gas, I would say not. And
right.
so this is where Opportunity Machine, and again, there's certainly oil and gas companies, mm-hmm. in related fields that are involved in Opportunity Machine, but it's kind of the entrepreneurial ecosystem for the rest of us.
So for people that don't have a lot of money starting out, this is really the place to start. You can look up Opportunity Machine.
Opportunitymachine.org.
Uh-huh, right.
Yep.
And you can also go to Lida. I know Lida offers a lot of resources.
Yep.
And I'm getting the signal that we just have a couple of minutes left.
I
want to wrap up this with a plug for your wife, Susan,
yep.
her new business. We were
yep.
talking about that she actually has a thriving business and right here in Lafayette.
So while I was I was chairman of Lida,
mm-hmm.
I not only recruited Susan to come down and marry me
from
Canada, but also personal success, but also she brought her business down,
mm-hmm.
and her company's LogoJet. They have about 25 employees, and they have been on the Inc. 5000 now for the last, I want to say, four years in a row. So
right.
that's pretty exciting. One of the fastest
right.
growing companies in America. Excited about that.
That
for
is
her.
Exciting.
Yep.
And I'm excited about this inaugural episode.
Yeah.
Tom, the time went by so fast. I want to thank you,
sure.
Tom Cox with
Thanks,
golfballs.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining us on Discover Lafayette. Before we end the episode, I want to share that Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission has generously underwritten startup of this endeavor. And so this show would not be happening without them. And I want to thank AOC Community Media also for helping me launch the podcast. Today we're filming at Delta Media. I'd like to thank Dylan Guillory, who's our producer. And thank you for watching. You can find this television show and all of our podcasts at discoverlafayette.net. I'm Jan Swift with Discover Lafayette. Thank you.